Without VA, I would have paid $25,000 for my hospital stay,
$42,000 for my education,
$74,000 for my home down payment. But because of my service, I paid zero.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. His own company has a long history of being sued for discrimination. He even called for reparations for white people and is firmly against inclusion and diversity programs. If elected, Moreno will rubber stamp Trump's radical 2025 and roll back policies that'll directly harm black families, our finances, jobs, social security, and health care. And he'll turn back the clock on our civil rights. Moreno thinks white supremacy will make America great again. Real talk, Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote to secure your rights and your future. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, still in Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, November the 3rd, 2024. We are in, for those watching in video, we are in a new backdrop here. Sorry for the shaking. We are in a new background. No longer are we positioned in front of a green screen projecting a map, but we have actual physical maps here in physical reality today. These might change. This background and scenery might change. I put this up specifically just a few minutes ago so that we would not have bare drywall and the sort of ripply wrinkles of the drywall visible on camera. That would not be acceptable. There are also books in the background, which you can judge. But today, in addition to that, in addition to your judgment, we will have a state of the wrestling business, which we'll get into. We will look at WrestleMania ticket sales prices, ticket prices, and how those have grown, especially last year and of course into this year as well. And we'll see how those prices are holding up. Spoiler, they are. We will also discuss other things we have on the agenda, including the rankings of these TV shows over time, which is some of the most important things that there is to media value, as well as NXT versus Dynamite coming up this Wednesday, and your questions. But we will go ahead and get started with the monthly state of the business that I like to do every first show of the month here, where we have all of the masses watching, and we have to explain what's happening in the wrestling business and what's the popularity of WWE and AEW. The cleanest way with the fewest headwinds to look at, with no headwinds, in fact, is attendance. And attendance is becoming a more complex story. For many quarters in a row here, we've had Raw and SmackDown attendances just rising and rising. And we've had Dynamite and Collision attendances on the descent. And that descent for Collision and Dynamite has not paused, has not repaired itself, has not turned around. But we are seeing a little bit of a plateauing, I would say, of Raw and SmackDown. Their attendances, especially now, this is just averages by the quarter. But if we look at what's the cleanest way to look at this is to look at the given Raw, the given SmackDown, the last time that Raw or SmackDown had been in that particular city. So that's not looking at Raw against a SmackDown. That's not looking at a SmackDown against a Raw. That's not looking at a house show against the TV. It's the same event type. Because I know you're going to say, well, but Friday is a better night for live attendance. We're only looking at SmackDowns against SmackDowns in the exact same city. And what we've seen now for a number of shows in a row, it's been a while now. It's not been since October the 5th, almost a month ago, since we've had a positive market-to-market same event comparison that was positive. Now, these aren't overly concerning. They were just sort of reaching the top of the limit of what these attendances are going to do at this moment in this sort of composition of what WWE's popularity is, which is greatly elevated. Let's keep in mind, greatly elevated from 2021, 2022. In any case, Raw in Hershey was down 15%. SmackDown in Brooklyn was down 6%. Raw in Philadelphia was against the WrestleMania Raw. So let's dismiss that one away. But we've got Columbia, South Carolina SmackDown on October 18th was flat. After all of these, almost all of these events had been positive comparisons, as you can see over here on the right. Overwhelmingly positive comparisons. We even had the UK tour that they did. We don't have every event, but we have most of the events that they did on the UK tour, and they're either flat or down. So we're seeing, yes, I've been asked the question a few times, is WWE's popularity plateauing? Well, their attendance is plateauing for the time being, and we'll continue to look at it again and again. And here on the free edition, we'll probably, this is what I like doing for the masses here who want to understand what's happening with wrestling business. Maybe you're not a subscriber. What is the state of WWE's popularity? It's probably still, it's still very healthy, but these attendances are starting to reach their plateau. Okay, what about AEW though? AEW continues to have almost completely negative comparisons. Here we have a table showing us every date going back to late April, and there's two positive comparisons here. Every other of these, I don't know how many this is, 15 or so comparisons we've got here are negative. Nashville Dynamite in July, Chicago Dynamite in July. Those were up by single digits of percent. But we've got the Cleveland Dynamite that they just did, the Fright Night, 3,681. These are all WrestleTix estimates of tickets distributed, by the way. Down 20%, the Cleveland Dynamite from the last time they did Dynamite in Cleveland. Collision in Toledo. Apparently, they did a Collision in Toledo before. Down 40%. Pittsburgh Dynamite on October 2nd, down 22%. And, of course, the Flushing New York Dynamite Grand Slam, down 22%. And that's the story, generally, of these numbers here. As Dynamite, as AEW continues to have weakened attendance. Okay, does that mean they're going out of business? Well, no, but we'll discuss that more. But what about TV ratings? Okay, TV ratings for AEW. Total viewership is down 17% year-to-date. That's just looking at it on a week-by-week basis. Dynamite is down 17%. Collision is down 25%. Meanwhile, WWE is down only 3% for Raw and 7% now for SmackDown. Now, SmackDown's got the issue of going against now in this period where they've got quite large margins of negative comparisons in the week-to-week comparison. It is now looking at a USA Network episode against a Fox episode. And of course, Fox has broader reach, a larger audience, a larger coverage of households have access to Fox versus USA Network. So that's definitely accounting for some of what we're seeing here in SmackDown, largely, I would say, especially when we're looking at double-digit negative comparisons, whereas before the move to USA Network, these comparisons were mostly positive. So we keep that in mind. And of course, Raw has been 2 hours now instead of 3 hours. We're not seeing any meaningful difference. We're seeing pretty much flat comparisons here. If that's helping the average, as I kind of predicted, if it's helping the average, it's like single digits of percent. Okay, but that's total viewership. That's just total viewership. And I know what you're thinking is, what about the demo? Well, what about the demo? If that really matters to advertisers and how you're selling advertising during your program. And Dynamite is down 18% in the demo. Collision is down 32% in the demo. By this comparison, Raw is actually up. And SmackDown, even though all these episodes since September 13th have been on the USA Network instead of on high reach Fox, they've now become flat. Despite all of these negative comparisons they've got on cable versus broadcast, they've just flattened out. Now, they're probably going to go negative as the year goes on here, but suffice to say, against the headwind of what about cord cutting, WWE is doing pretty well, especially in the demo, and their comparisons in total viewership are not as good looking, which tells you that the viewership, the audience of these live versus live and same day viewership, the audience is getting younger, whereas while these comparisons in the demo, you know, down 17% for Dynamite, down 18%. Okay, they're about the same, down 25% for Collision, down 32% for Collision in the demo. That means Collision's audience is almost certainly getting older, but Dynamite's audience is staying about the same age because it's down to the same, just about the same degree in the demo. But what about cord cutting? What if we gave this, you know, some sort of offsetting factor for cord cutting? What would that be? Well, I looked at Xfinity. I looked at Comcast, their releases, and Charter, who just did their quarterly updates this past week, I believe on Thursday and Friday. And what we found is, you know, now these are the two biggest cable carriers in the United States. This is not every cable carrier in the United States. I did not go through Breeze Line and Verizon. I didn't go to YouTube TV, which is, I think, growing. I'm a subscriber now. But these are the two biggest. I didn't go to DirecTV or Dish. Maybe in the future we'll get into a routine where I dig this up in an automated way. But Xfinity, Comcast, in terms of its cable subscribers, it's what they call video subscribers, it was down 11% on the quarter year over year. Charter Spectrum down 9% year over year. So let's call it, without doing deeper research here, to get them, and this is what, when I did go through all of them via LRG research and sort of did a weighted average on what the delta was, it came out to about 9%. Well, let's call it 10%. Well, if we call it 10%, we've still got 18% down for Dynamite, 32% down for Collision. And I know you probably want to say, well, with younger people, that rate of cord cutting is probably even greater. It is, but I doubt it's 18%. And I'm sure it's not 32%. And if you were to apply those offsetting factors to Raw and SmackDown, well, Raw and SmackDown must be really positive then if we're going to add a 10% gimme or even greater than 10% gimme to Raw and SmackDown. Okay, we'll look at NXT also later. But what really matters to the media value, now that can tell you something about popularity, viewership, especially when you try to adjust and take into account all the things you should take into account to get an idea of how the ratings reflect popularity. That is one issue that we can think about and say, yes, we got the attendance story for AEW that's negative. We've got the TV rating story for AEW that's negative. We've got a rating story for WWE that's pretty positive. We've got an attendance story that's flattening in its direction, but on the whole versus a couple of years ago is quite positive. Now, what really matters to whether or not AEW is going to go out of business is, well, as we know, they got a renewal at a rate of about doubling their TV value previously from WBD. And the reason why they got that is because of this chart here, in that this is their, this is one way to look at it. This is not what David Zaslav looks at, I'm sure, and decides he's going to give exactly this dollar amount. But this is what really reflects media value, the TV deals. And what we see here is a great picture of stability for SmackDown, for Raw, and for Dynamite. And in fact, somehow, sometime in October 2023, this story got even better for Dynamite. So what we're looking at here is Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis versus all cable originals and all broadcast primetime. This is just primetime programming. This is the data. This is not all the data that we would want, but this is the best data that we have that is public, that I can aggregate and put together and show in a chart. Okay, what about this? What about that? Well, this is all the data that we've got, and without getting a $10,000 Nielsen subscription, this is what we have access to. And what we see is SmackDown and Raw are well into the top 50, maybe in the upper half of the top 50 on the week, on a median basis. And Dynamite is near, just below the top 50, maybe in the 60 or the 70 range on a median basis. And NXT has really improved its standing, where it was down here in the 200s a couple years ago, and is now ranking over into the top 100 on a weekly basis. That story has not changed much since NXT moved from the USA Network to CW, in any case. And we've seen how Collision has started out really strongly, descended, and now flattened out to hitting about the 150 mark. It's ranking at about 100, the 150th most watched show in the demo on the week. And Rampage is a margin below that into the top 200, but not far above not much better than being in the top 200. And even Rampage, despite its decline in viewership over time, we didn't even look at Rampage and how Rampage has declined in those charts. We just looked at Dynamite and Collision. But even Rampage, since the middle of the year or so, has improved its ranking somehow, as just more programming has shed away and declined worse than these programs have. So that's why these programs, and this is what were the most watched programs this past week. It was football. It was MLB. We can look at what else there was. We have this article that I believe is accessible for everybody in the world. Where do you, in this given week, to give us a concrete example, where did WWE and where did SmackDown and Raw rank? They ranked SmackDown at number 20 with its 0.43 rating, and Raw right next to it virtually with its 0.42, only, you know, with Florida State and Miami right in between. Fighting that was Florida, right? Florida last night where there's fighting. Anyway, so we've got, you know, NFL games, the World Series. This is only prime time, so we don't have the Sunday window here. We've got the Monday Night Football game between the Giants and Steelers, and the various simulcasts thereof. We've got college football. We've got broadcast primetime program like Dancing with the Stars and Survivor. We've got some big college football broadcasts. We've got something called Tracker. We've got Georgie and Mandy's first marriage. Is that the next Big Bang Theory in waiting here from the CW family? We've got an NBA game, the Spurs and Mavericks, Ghosts, Big Ten football, and then we start to get into the wrestling, into WWE and Raw. Well, where is Dynamite or NXT for that matter? Or Collision's not on here, I'll tell you. Rampage is not on here, I'll tell you. And we get down to 81, and then we do see Dynamite, which, big news here. I think I've decided that going forward, we're going to change some of our visualizations and upgrade them, especially using something called Data Wrapper. And the color coding is going to be evolving, I think, soon. And we're going to use purple for Dynamite going forward, because it's really abandoned the gray that I've associated with over the years. Anyway, Dynamite is at 81, around things like 90 Day Fiancé, 2020 on ABC, the Jesse Waters primetime Fox News show, college football on Thursday night, Syracuse at Pittsburgh, Real Housewives outdoing a couple episodes of Gutfeld, and so on. And then we have NXT here at 97, outdoing Krapopolis on Fox, a broadcast animated series, outdoing Anderson Cooper. Again, this is just in the demo. These news broadcasts are blowing away shows like NXT or Dynamite when we're talking about total viewership. You know, we've got Anderson Cooper being watched by about 1.4 million people versus just over 500,000 people for NXT. Just an idea of how old that cable news viewership is, and how much younger by comparison the wrestling viewership is. And this is why we have these TV shows, despite, in AEW's case, despite viewership declining over time, we have media value growing over time, because most shows have declined worse than these shows have. Or at least these live broadcasts are the shows that are left standing. And this is why WWE is breaking its financial records every year. And this is why AEW will probably be profitable, maybe as soon as next year, but sometime in the lifetime of its next deal, 3 years with a fourth year option. Who knows if they'll get another deal? Rumors are they're talking to broadcast networks, possibly including Fox, if they get another TV deal. That would even further improve their financial picture. So, by the way, you're watching WrestleNomics Radio, which is every Sunday for subscribers. It's free the first Sunday of each month, and the graphics team has upgraded our Patreon plate advertisement. And look at this. We've got a stock photo involved here, but if you sign up for the Patreon at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, you'll get the in-depth analysis that I do nearly every day on every TV show that happens, with TV ratings, attendance analysis, YouTube analysis, even cage match match ratings analysis at the very end there. All of that is powered by my various scripts and spreadsheets. You also get access to this program again every Sunday at 11. And if you're on the data subscriber tier, you get access to my archives of TV ratings, quarter hour ratings, and YouTube views. Again, that's patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And speaking of quarter hours and YouTube, this Bloodline storyline, is it over with? It's not a draw anymore, right? It's not a draw anymore. Well, this clip from two Fridays ago, Jimmy and Jey Uso reunite after ripping gold from the Bloodline after the tag title change with the Motor City Machine Guns. This hit 2 million viewers on YouTube, which is not many videos for WWE hit 2 million viewers. Very few of them do. So that happened. But that's just one. Maybe that was a fluke. Well, if we look at the quarter hours that were associated with this very segment, it popped the final quarter of SmackDown on USA Network by 17% overall, by 20% with viewers 18 to 49. This doesn't happen very often at all. Very rare that you see something that's over a 15% delta from quarter to quarter. This is one of the biggest quarter to quarter jumps. And I know we have ad breaks marked out here, and usually it's the case that, well, there was two ad breaks in the prior quarter, which there were, and then there's no ad breaks. There was an ad break in here. There was a picture through picture ad break. But nonetheless, even if you take all of the ad breaks into consideration, you rarely see something that's in the 20% for the demo, or at 17%. I looked it up at the time to say how many quarter hours year to date have really reached this threshold, and it's less than 10, I believe, for all six shows that we follow here. So clearly, what can you say here? The YouTube data suggests this. The quarter hour data supports this, that there was special interest. There was drawing power in this reuniting of the Usos. But it goes on. We're not done yet. Then on Monday, Jey and Jimmy Uso rappel Bloodline sneak attack on Raw highlights October 28th. Did that get affirmed by that reached a million viewers? Okay, or a million views, I should say. And that's a global number. We should point out here, we're looking at TV viewership that is US only. This is a global number. It reached 1 million views. And views are not viewership. It's a different way of measuring, but very few, especially lately. There had been times where we would get, like, you know, every week there'd be something in WWE that would hit a million. But suffice to say that it's the minority of YouTube clips from weekly TV shows that hit a million views. Okay, anyway. And then we had in the same show this backstage segment of Jimmy and Jey Uso see Sami Zayn talking to Solo Sikoa, also reaching 1 million views on YouTube. What do we see in the quarter hours that reflect this? The Jimmy and Jey Uso live promo that opened the show, which had no ad breaks in it. Nonetheless, it was the very peak of the show, which is about as well as you can expect to do. It had no ad breaks to start off the show. It's got some advantages. You know, you're putting it in the starting lineup. You're having it lead off. So hopefully it's doing well. You're giving it an opportunity to succeed. And it really can't do much better than it did here in terms of it was the high point of the show. And then we had the backstage angle along with the Damian Priest versus Dominic Mysterio match. So maybe some credit to those two. Backstage angles tend to be shorter and not overly affecting the rating, but, you know, this was up 9%, up 4% from the previous quarter hour. So it supports the notion. It certainly does not dissuade the notion that this is a draw as we go on here. There's more. The Bloodline storyline continues as this Roman Reigns and the Usos stand united before Crown Jewel this past Friday, November 1st. This segment on YouTube also reaching 1 million views globally. Nothing else in this week did that. And again, we've gone a number of weeks here. I think, you know, nothing has reached a million views within 7 days for even WWE, whether it be Raw or SmackDown or NXT. And AEW is another story, which we'll get to. And we don't have quarter hours yet to reflect on how this did in terms of the TV rating itself. So in AEW land, very few YouTube videos reach 1 million views within 7 days, which is the amount of time that we track all of this for. But one video did this week for AEW, and that was Bobby Lashley comes face to face with Swerve Strickland, as that reached 1 million views. And there are only two other videos that have reached 1 million views within 7 days this year. Not only the debut of Bobby Lashley, the debut of Mercedes Moné, and highlights of Christian versus Adam Copeland I Quit match. common theme there, a lot of former WWE people. So there's 3 year to date, which sort of tells you if you're on track to maybe finish the year with three. But let's say they even get one more and they're at four, or maybe something really big happens and they're at five or something like that. Well, how many 1 million view videos were there last year? There were nine. So we're at three here, year to date. There were nine last year, three times as many. And all of those, I think it happened before that. Now there were one, two, three. There was a November 1st, a November 29th, and a December 6th. And this was, what I tell you, it was Darby Allin dethrones the king of television in his hometown of Seattle. CM Punk has plenty to say in his return to television on Collision, on the first episode of Collision. The Nature Boy Ric Flair in AEW. He has an iconic gift for the legendary Sting. Rated R superstar Adam Copeland makes his in-ring debut against Luchasaurus. Adam Copeland kicks off a must-see opening to Collision. Adam Copeland has arrived in All Elite Wrestling. Sting and Adam Copeland. Christian Cage and Adam Copeland. Christian Cage versus Adam Copeland. So a lot of Adam Copeland there. A lot of Edge there. A lot of former WWE people there, and debuts and returns. These are moments that, especially online, do really well. The most encouraging one, as far as like somebody who's really established with AEW, not established prior to AEW or in WWE, is the Darby Allin clip there. As he dethrones Samoa Joe, the king of television. That's what that was, right? But for the most part, everything else in that year last year was, well, it was CM Punk coming back, it was Ric Flair, it's Edge, who I still want to call Edge, and Christian. In 2022, okay, that's 2023, there were nine videos that reached a million. In this year, again, there's three. In 2022, there's 32 videos. Three this year, nine last year, 32 videos reaching a million in 2022. But I think it's just reflective of the story that we see more generally that we just talked about in the state of the business, is that you're seeing a declining story in attendance. You're seeing a declining story in TV ratings. You're seeing a declining story in digital here with YouTube, on a platform that, if anything, it has a tailwind, not a headwind. It is being pushed, not pushed against, in terms of media adoption, more people using, younger people using YouTube. YouTube, the most watched streaming platform of all, by the way, even ahead of Netflix. But in any case, there's an immense amount of content there. I won't go through all, 32 videos here for you. But suffice to say, that's another sub-story that we can tell in this broader story of the decline in popularity and interest of AEW. It's even happening on digital in this case. Okay. How did that segment, Bobby Lashley and Swerve, do in terms of a rating? Well, it occupied this 11-minute overrun, pretty long overrun that Dynamite had, and it was the peak in the demo. It grew the demo by 7%. It peaked the demo up to a 0.21 on a show that averaged 0.19. So it did well enough. It didn't light up our box here, but it's an overrun. Okay, so it there's interest in this. Well, you can assess it as it goes on and see if it lasts. And now WrestleMania tickets, as promised. WrestleMania tickets are expensive. Have you heard? What used to be an $89 ticket in 2008 in Orlando, it's been, it got up to, in 2015, sort of the post, post the first year of the W Network, got up to be $218 in Santa Clara, about the same for the WrestleMania 32 with the historic attendance, whatever you believe it is. I respect your beliefs, whatever they are. And it got into the 200 range in 2019, last WrestleMania before the pandemic, got up to $268. That's a lot of money. That's far above what the minimum wage is per hour. It's some 10 times that, almost. Well, no, more than 10 times that. And then we have the two-day WrestleMania era starts. So you're sort of doubling your money. So I'm saying here, what is the average ticket price per night still? And it gets lower because the supply gets greater because we have more tickets to move. And it gets to about $150 through Tampa in 2021, $136 in Arlington for 2022, $171 in Englewood. And by the way, all of this is based on W's disclosures with their KPIs, breaking out WrestleMania attendance, which is a paid number. We've got gate numbers that were either announced or we can deduce via comparisons that W has disclosed year over year in terms of percentages. And we do have a public records request response for 2024 in Philadelphia this year. The average ticket price per night, $341, blowing away all previous average ticket prices, $341 per night. And this year, I can't tell you what the average ticket price is going to be, but I can tell you what the minimum going price is that's left on the table here. If we navigate our way over to Ticketmaster here, they're selling two-day combos only at this point on Ticketmaster, first market, and the lowest price. What if I want one ticket? If I want just one ticket, I got to buy both nights together at this point, and the lowest price I can get right now is $950. $950 divided by two is what, $475, I think? So again, what was the high ticket price last year? $341. That's the lowest available now. Now I have seen $800 on here earlier. And this is first market, so you could say, well, maybe it's the case that that's what they're trying to sell these tickets for. And there's still quite a few tickets left, right? If we zoom in on this map and see how many tickets that they've got actually open to inventory here, if I zoom in a couple times, it'll show me the dots. There's some dots here. I'll let WrestleTix analyze that and figure out how many tickets have really been moved here, but there's some ticket availability here. Now, if you look at the secondary market, maybe you would say, well, on the secondary market, I bet they're selling for less than face value because they've overpriced this. But that's not what you see. If you go to SeatGeek, you've got two-day passes on sale here for no cheaper than $813, two-day passes. So you're presumably that's slightly over face value, or it's at least close to face value at worst. And if we look at, well, maybe that's just SeatGeek. What if we look at another site here? What if we look at StubHub? Two-day tickets also no cheaper than $816. So in the range of the cheapest ticket that I've seen. And, you know, and it's not telling you that they've overpriced this, at least at this point. And I think it's, you know, and this, look at this little marker that StubHub, which is probably in some sort of business partnership with WWE, probably should mention, but this event is in the top 10% of events in WWE WrestleMania. I don't know what that means. When ranked based on the rate of unique visitors to the event over the past day. Well, wrestling fans, as usual, are avidly looking at this page, I guess. So I think, you know, you don't want to sell out as much as selling out is a good public story. Standing room only, they're selling here? They're selling standing room only over here. For what? $6,729. Two tickets for, I don't know what's going on there. In any case, selling out means that you might have priced it too low. And if you want to make the most money possible, then you probably want a picture at about this time that looks like this picture that's on Ticketmaster right now, where you've got some supply, where you're really squeezing the consumer. I know this is a very capitalist description, but where you're really squeezing the consumer and really bargaining them and getting them to pay the most that they're willing to pay. Does that earn you goodwill? Probably not. But does it earn you a lot of money? Yeah, this is probably, if it comes, you know, anywhere close to the usual volume of what WrestleMania usually sells, which is about 55,000 each night, at these prices, I would think that the average ticket price is going to be well above $341. In fact, we can't find a ticket that is priced, we can find tickets that are priced around $400 per night, and those appear to be the cheapest tickets. And it's not like there were cheaper tickets that have already moved. So I'm thinking that the average ticket sale price, especially when we're looking at some of those floor seats that are, you know, $10,000 per night, that the average ticket price is going to be quite high. And if they sell, again, their usual volume, this is going to blow away all records, even when adjusting for inflation. What is the record? The record adjusting for inflation is WrestleMania 32 in 2016, which sold at the time, including fees, $17.3 million in tickets. And if you adjust that to inflation in today's dollars, is about $22 or $23 million. So that's what each night would have to exceed to break the single day, single event, all-time gate record in all of pro wrestling history. And it certainly seems positioned to do that. This year's WrestleMania came close to that, and it did that in terms of not adjusting for inflation, but didn't surpass WrestleMania 32 when adjusting for inflation, nor did it pass WrestleMania in 2019 when adjusting for inflation. These events, it's looking like, are going to do that.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
And moving to merchandise rankings, estimates based on how these how various merchandise items are ranking on the top sellers pages of WWE Shop and Shop AEW and Pro Wrestling Tees. This month, Jey Uso looks really strong, especially if we look at his Yeet shirts, which are appearing here in the lower ranks of the top 10. We've even got a Jimmy Uso shirt that has done quite well here in terms of the ranks. Now, we should caveat all this to say this is based on a daily reading of where items are ranking. And I still got Chris Jericho in here. I thought I removed that. That Chris Jericho obviously should not be in here. This is part of an earlier error where I erroneously had some items that were counting towards Chris Jericho. He is not in the W Shop top 10. And what we would have here instead of him is the Terror Twins would be like in the number 10 or number 9 spot. So this is based on daily data reads of, in this case, WShop.com, sorted by top sellers. And then we're doing a reverse rank value and a count of how many days the item appeared in the top 10. And number one, the item that appeared in the top 10, 24 out of the 31 days, is the Roman Reigns OTC shirt. And the number two is the John Cena. We're already getting ready for the John Cena farewell shirt. Those shirts ranked 19 out of 31 days in the top 10. And we can go through this and so on. We've got another OTC, same design, just on a hoodie. And another one with the sleeveless pullover hoodie. So we did not, you know, aggregate these together and combine them. Every item is its own online item here. And then we have the AEW Shop. This is just for October too, by the way. In this month, we've got the FTR Summit Coffee, which I think is seems to be a fundraiser for hurricane relief in North Carolina, where FTR are from. And this ranked in the top 10 on Shop AEW, 25 out of 31 days. It appeared on the shop for 27 days, and that is the number one item, followed by the Britt Baker Britsburg football jersey. We've got a Will Nightingale Micro Brawler action figure, Danhausen mystery box, whatever that is, an Adam Copeland figure, and we can go on and on here. And then we've got Pro Wrestling Tees, where the top category is AEW stuff, followed by Joe Henry, who has been leading on Pro Wrestling Tees for a number of months here, where we've got Silent J and Silent Bob and J figures here at number one and number two. But then the I Believe in Joe Henry shirt, which has been ranking quite highly. If we think that these rankings are honest and actually reflective of actual sales, which I can't tell you yay or nay, but this analysis has matched up with Pro Wrestling Tees graphic that they put out about who the top sellers are at the end of the year. This analysis has matched up with WWE Shop's seemingly ordered list of who the top sellers were at the end of last year. Anyway, Joe Henry, number three here with his I Believe in Joe Henry shirt, ranked in the top 10, 18 out of 31 days, and so on. A lot of the same items are on Pro Wrestling Tees as Shop AEW. Year to date, and here we have CM Punk number one. I know that The Fanatics CEO congratulated Cody Rhodes for being the top seller for Fanatics, and they have the real data, so he may be he would certainly be in a position to know. We have Cody Rhodes here at number three, just based on this analysis. So we do have Cody Rhodes doing well, doing better than Roman Reigns and Stone Cold Steve Austin, the W brand itself. And by the way, this is just for apparel, so we don't get into things like replica belts and whatnot, and mugs and whatever else. There's tons of stuff that's on W Shop. And the top items for the year to date, as of Halloween, January 1st through Halloween, is the men's black Jey Uso Yeet t-shirt, which has been in the top 10, 147 out of the 300 days that it's been on the shop. It's about half the days in this year it has been in the top 10, which is better than any other item. Even we use reverse rank value with a limit of 50. And then we've got the CM Punk t-shirt, two of them are in the next two slots. And then we got the OTC t-shirt for Roman Reigns. We got the John Cena farewell shirt. We got more Roman Reigns. We got another CM Punk item here, another Yeet shirt, a Randy Orton shirt, and a Cody Rhodes shirt at number 10. So, and then looking at Shop AEW, we've got items, the MJF, who are the top items. Got Will Ospreay at the top after the AEW brand itself, which is a lot of DVDs. Shop AEW, as well as Pro Wrestling Tees, which are basically the same design site, don't have a separation for apparel like Shop AEW, like Shop WWE, like W Shop do. So we have a lot of AEW shirts, but also DVDs and things like that. After AEW, we've got Will Ospreay at number one, I guess number two. We've got Swerve Strickland at number three, the Ring of Honor brand, MJF, the Outrunners, who have been ascending lately, Mercedes Moné, Sting, Orange Cassidy, and Bryan Danielson. The top item still year to date is the Better Than You Bay shirt for MJF and Adam Cole. An Adam Copeland rated R era, a Bullet Club shirt, which is actually not this Bullet Club shirt, but the old fashioned Bullet Club shirt is still the number one item that I've got for Pro Wrestling Tees here. We'll go on. CM Punk, the number four item on the Shop AEW list. So he's ranking highly, his items ranking highly on both the Shop AEW page and on the W Shop page, even though he's not ranking in, even though he's not on the site, I don't think anymore. In 67, he was on this item was on the Shop AEW page for 67 days. All 67 days, it ranked in the top 10. We've got some Will Ospreay stuff, as you would expect. We got an MGF shirt. We've got another, I feel like I'm on Home Shopping Network here, doing my shop at home gimmick here, Don West. All right, and we'll here's the rest of them. Joe Henry, of course, ranking highly at number four here, and a lot of the same stuff that you can get on the AW site. So then from there, an update on who actually owns WWE. The answer is TKO. Okay, but who owns TKO? TKO is owned, as you may know, by Endeavor, which is itself owned in turn by a bank called Silver Lake, a private equity firm. Have you heard of private equity? So just to explain and update everyone on who owns the parent company of WWE and AEW, controlling ownership, 54% at this point, and it'll be a little bit more once the transaction in, I believe, March of 2025 is complete. That results in TKO also taking into it the current Endeavor assets, PBR, On Location, and IMG. TKO will, Endeavor will become about 59%. We'll have about 59% of the stake in TKO. So we'll look back at what was happening just before the TKO transaction was completed. In 2022 and 2023, Vince McMahon held just over one third of all WWE shares, which is not, which by itself would not give him control, but because WWE, since it went public in 1999, contrary to popular belief, WWE did not become a publicly traded company when they went TVPG in 2008 or 10 or whatever that was. WWE was always a publicly traded company since October 1999, in any case. he now has. He started with I think about 50%, 51%, something like that in the very earliest days of WWE being a public stock. He sold some of that over time, including to fund his second venture at the NFL or at the XFL. So he sold some stock to relaunch the XFL. In any case, he ends up down to 38% of the entire company. But Vince McMahon and his direct descendants, not you, Triple H, his direct descendants have always been, since 1999, granted special voting power. So each one of their shares counts 10 times against everybody else's shares. They have Class B stock. This is not something that's unique to Vince McMahon and the McMahon family. This is something that happens for a number of publicly traded companies. It gives founders special founder power so that they can draw their stock down and sell some of it off, but still control the company. And we even hear things like Tony Khan say that, you know, he won't deny that WBD has some minority, stock in WBD. He won't deny that WBD has some minority interest in AEW, but he insists that he has 100% of the voting power, which implies that WBD has non-voting stock. That doesn't give them any voting power, is what he's implying there. In any case, because Vince McMahon has special super shares that give him 10x voting power, he had, at the time that he had 38% of the shares, he had 81% of the voting power. So, in essence, he could control WWE. What does that mean? That means that when he resigned for the first time in July of 2022, he had resigned as CEO. He had resigned as chairman of the board. He had resigned as head of creative, even though he didn't resign on an interim basis from that role when he first resigned at an interim basis. He resigned from all roles and he was effectively out of the company. And then he decided that he wanted to return in January of 2023. He was able to do this because of this right here. He was able to do something called written consent, which is something that a controlling shareholder can do and just decide to re-add himself to the board of directors, which he did. So he added himself to the board of directors as well as former WWE executives George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, removed certain other members. Certain other members resigned, including Stephanie McMahon in the days that followed, and he was able to just force his way back into the company because he still controlled the company. Now, when the merger was completed in September 23, that special voting power went away and he no longer had enhanced voting rights. Every one of his shares counted as one vote, just like everybody else's shares. And therefore, when he resigned this year in January 2024, following the lawsuit filed by Janelle Grant, he resigned from all roles. He will not be able to return in the same way, at least. He would essentially need the approval and the support of Endeavor to return to WWE, which makes it very unlikely that he's ever going to return to WWE. Now, Vince McMahon did sell a lot of his shares. In the last 12 months or 14 months or so, he sold a lot of stock, but contrary to popular belief, Vince McMahon has not sold all of his stock, or at least there's no public records to tell us that he has sold all of his stock. As of April 24th this year, he still owns some 8 million TKO shares, which is just under 5% of the company. And again, that's just under 5% of the voting power. So he will not be able to, through written consent, force his way back into the company. So who else owns TKO? Well, it's a lot of boring financial institutions. Lindsdale Train has long been the biggest financial institution shareholder in WWE. It's one of two of the biggest shareholders in TKO. Lindsdale Train is a UK financial institution. Vanguard is a mutual fund financial institution that owns zillions of companies. BlackRock, the same. Morgan Stanley, 91, which is another UK, I believe, financial institution. And then numerous others mostly financial institutions that own the rest of the stock. They all own less than 2.5%, including all you retail investors out there. You own a very, 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 very small minority. Stephanie McMahon at this point might own 1 or 2% of the company, probably less than that, somewhere around that. Linda owns less than 1%. And various executives have shares that are worth a lot of money to you and me, but on the scale of TKO is you know, less than 1%, might be less than 0.1%, including Paul Levesque. So there's all that. Now to your questions, and maybe my answers, maybe my evasive answers. We'll see. It remains to be seen. First, Delmar. He says, just to tie up loose ends. First of all, Delmar sends a lot of questions, which we love and we appreciate. He will often send me a question late in the process of my slides making. So what we have here, we will have two questions from Delmar, one of which is from last week, which is this question. Just to tie up loose ends, next week, which is this week, will be AEW's biggest test, not just winning for bragging rights, but ensuring they stay steady and NXT doesn't drop them badly. Some wrestling media outlets have mentioned the 329,000 number 3 weeks ago. This is when AEW was preempted to Tuesday, that it made it apparent that AEW no longer has exclusivity. Not sure what that means, but next week we will get that read. NXT has the advantage of being on network TV, main roster talent, and a themed ECW arena. But they're putting up a fight and making the head-to-head more interesting because it's a preempted NXT going against a much weakened Dynamite. Someone on the WWE side told me earlier this week that they're confident that NXT is going to win because this is going to be promoted, that it's on Wednesday on all their programming leading up to the Wednesday broadcast. I think it will be close. You know, this is easy to say. It will be closer in total viewership than it will be in the demo. Let's look at where they have been trending so far. We've got NXT on CW separated out here, starting off very high and doing a really strong second episode that I thought was going, and this gets into Delmar's next question, but that I thought would be indicative of how much that rating was going to retain for CW, where it was into the high 800,000s of viewers. It has plummeted here to just over 600,000 viewers, but then popped back up to about 700,000 and then down against World Series to under 600,000. So that's total viewership. Now the demo has been, right, the demo compared to Dynamite has been, Dynamite has been more strongly ahead of NXT, even on CW in these, you know, these last 3 weeks, I guess we could say, where Dynamite has done a 0.20 and a 0.19 and a 0.19 versus NXT doing, you know, in the teens here, or you know, I guess in the teens. So what the disadvantage will be that NXT is out of its normal slot. The advantage for NXT will be that it's a special show. It's in Philadelphia. It's ECW nostalgia. A disadvantage that will on its face go to both of them is that there's going to be probably enormous news competition from the cable networks. Who knows, maybe even the networks, depending on what happens here in the United States following the election, where we, you know, I think common wisdom is that we might not know who won the election on election night, but you never know what's going to happen here. So I think Dynamite will edge them out in total viewership. I think Dynamite will beat them more decidedly in the demo. I could be wrong though. Delmar's next question is that how would you assess NXT's rating so far on CW, and has it been positive, negative, or a mixed bag? I would like to, oh, he's going to call me out here and use my own words against me here. I would like to bring up, you made an interesting, a point you made in an interesting article on WrestleNomics Patreon on September 30th, where I wrote, several weeks into its CW run, NXT's ratings could reveal a lot about the network's drawing power and how willing wrestling fans, specifically NXT viewers, are to follow the show to a network they may not typically watch. And let's look at how these ratings have trended across, you know, the change in network. Total viewership appears to be about where it was if we take these last 3 weeks as more reflective of the norm and not these first 2 weeks, this total viewership looks pretty similar to the USA Network period. And if we look in the demo, this demo was down quite strongly against the World Series this past Tuesday. But otherwise, these demo ratings look pretty much like the USA Network demo ratings. Now, in terms of what CW is doing normally, again, as we said, leading up to this change in network, this is blowing away anything else practically on CW, except for some occasional awards show specials or something like that. These are really good ratings for CW. And they're getting it for about $25 million per year, which is probably pretty cost effective. It's a good price for them. I don't know how to calculate their return on investment for this, but they're getting a show that's doing a lot better than what would be in its place. So is it positive in terms of holding up and delivering the same viewership? Yeah, I would say so. It is what we said it was. They are who we thought they were. This is a show that's going to do about the same viewership, regardless of the change in network, even though it's a lower profile network, but not that much better, even though it's on broadcast, which in theory is in more households than the USA Network. So I would say, yeah, about what we expected it to be and positive, and we kind of expected that it would maintain its viewership, and it looks like it has. Unless this number that they did this past Tuesday is indicative of some norm. But even that, if you look at the total viewership, is in the range of what USA was doing. So yeah, NXT continues to do pretty well. And this is how it's doing year over year versus the same weeks. And it is down. We are seeing some negative comparisons here, particularly in the demo. We had a stronger than usual World Series, but you know, we'll let that wash out over time. I would still like to see more. We still need to see more episodes, more ratings for this to play out and make more of a judgment. Billy P says, before I ask my question, I just wanted to say the Pollock and Thurston episode about the Ring Boy lawsuit was excellent. It's embarrassing to me how few places cover these types of stories in any depth. So I appreciate the continuing coverage from both of you. So my question is whether you have any worries or thoughts as to whether covering these types of harder and more controversial topics can hurt WrestleNomics or the Pollock and Thurston show in any way. This could be by having less access to companies or individuals, or having pushback in ways behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. Thanks again for your great work. Thanks, Billy. Access is not something that's like, it's not, it would be one thing if we were relying on access to like interviews of WWE talent, or AEW talent for that matter, which we have never had as a guest on Pollock and Thurston or on any WrestleNomics content. There's really nothing. There's really no, unless there's like, you know, I don't know, we have to get into like conspiracy theories to think about what they could be doing behind the scenes to plot against WrestleNomics. I have no information to support that anything like that is happening. I have no concern and no fear about this stuff. Like, I'm not unaware of the fact that when we cover stuff like this, I'm sure WWE would prefer that we not cover things that are negative to their brand and image and their message. But the worst that they could do to us is just stop credentialing us on the occasions when we do apply for credentials at WWE events, and not letting us into press conferences, and that has, you know, minimal value to us. I think it has more value to them in terms of supporting the appearance that they are open to questions, that they are open to any questions that are respectfully enough asked. And if I do, you know, if a question from myself or from John Pollock is lending credibility to these press conferences, well, that's something of a value to WWE. If they don't include us in that, we're not losing much value, and it's, you know, well, it's not going to help them in any way, I guess, in terms of, it's not going to encourage us to be nicer to them. So no, I don't have any concern or any fear. Like, I think in AEW's case too, I think as AEW's business has declined, at least not now, its media deal is strong, and they're going to be financially viable probably pretty soon. But as their attendance has gone down and as their TV ratings have gone down, and as I have covered that in whatever way I've covered it, I think that has led to people in AEW liking me a lot less. So I think that has happened. And I think it's no coincidence probably that I have not been called on for media calls in the last, I think April was the last time I was called on, even though I've been on the line every time. So there are things like that, that are, you know, maybe I'm in the penalty box there because, you know, I've been critical of AEW. But I have, like, it doesn't hurt me though in any like financial way. So they're free to do whatever they want and I'm free to do whatever I want. And I think I have no fear, like whatever. Eric K says, how much money per year do you think Tony Khan could reasonably expect from an ROH TV deal on True TV? Not much, I think, is the answer there, but it's something that may be more like it's supportive of a partnership with your by far most valuable partner, Warner Brothers Discovery. I would not expect much money from it because it would be a show that they would be not incurring much added expense to produce because they're going to be taping Ring of Honor matches at the tapings that they're already doing. They're not going to be doing more tapings because of Ring of Honor, right? I don't think they've done a Ring of Honor specific taping other than their pay-per-views in a long time. And I don't see any reason why they would have to do that. It's just extra matches that they're producing for their more important content that they're shooting live. Okay. So the expense on AEW/Ring of Honor's part is minimal. So whatever they get is kind of gravy, you know. If it's a very low value deal, it's kind of all margin there, I would think, for the most part. You know, yeah, there's some extra expenses that might come with, you know, producing that content, paying talent and whatever other internal costs there are to preparing that content and making sure that it's edited and it's in the right format and so forth, and other things that are, you know, sort of beyond my purview. But so what value? I mean, what viewership is this going to do? It's going to do far lower viewership than Collision or Rampage because it's lower profile than Collision or Rampage. It's going to do lower viewership in addition to that, probably because it is on True TV and not TBS TNT. I mean, I see this doing like a Impact Wrestling type number where, like, I don't know that it would do with 100,000 viewers. We're talking about very low ratings in the demo here. You know, maybe under 0.05. Sure, if this happened, there would be a huge debut episode that would do well, and then every episode after that would do lower than the debut episode, as they all seemingly do. What's NXT's deal? You're getting a lot lower than that, I would think, but then again, the NXT deal was like this anomaly, apparently, in terms of cost per viewer hour. I would think, you know, something still under NXT because it's not going to deliver anywhere near what the NXT deal is delivering. Something probably well under 20 million, maybe under 15 million, which was NXT's old value on USA Network. Maybe under 10 million. Kind of just shoulder programming, you know? What did AEW get for it's an all-access show. What did AEW get for the Roads to the Top show? Even though those were like 6-episode series, this would be presumably a 52 week a year series. I almost feel like it's something that would be more about supporting the partner and supporting that extremely valuable and important relationship versus the monetary return. Even though there might be some sort of monetary payment for it, very little, because the viewership would not be very big, I think, is the answer. Then Roman G says, good morning, Brandon. I'm going to throw a curveball and ask a non AEW question, building off of the general WWE live event and WrestleMania ticket pricing convo. I wanted to get your take on if you think this will all head to. Do prices ever go back down with a plateau/decline of sales, or does Endeavor decide to keep prices higher to preserve a higher brand value? Side note, with some anecdotal sampling, 100 level Row 29 tickets were $1,000 in Philly and were $1,100 per ticket per night for the 2-day pass. So I think you're saying they were $1,000 for both days in Philadelphia and were double and then some for the 2-day. I imagine that those will go up for the single day on sale prices. Thanks and have a great day. Thanks, Roman. So do I think that prices will ever go back down with a plateau or decline in sales, or does Endeavor decide to keep prices to preserve a higher brand value? I think they'll do whatever supply and demand, games they can play in terms of, they want essentially not all the tickets to be sold right away, because if the tickets are sold out right away, then you're not pricing it as high as you could have and not getting as much money out of these sales that you could have. If we, ended up in a world where WB got a lot less popular for some reason, which is not really foreseeable, but if it got a lot less popular for some reason and there was a lot weaker demand for a WrestleMania, I think you would see the prices get a little bit lower.
Yeah.
If it means that they assess there's a strategy to get the most money over an alternative of keeping the prices at a higher rate and ending up with a stadium that's, not as full. I think there is some brand value in ensuring that the stadium is full for your biggest event of the year. As opposed to, putting 20, 30,000 people in a 50,000 seat configuration. I think they would probably price it to that. I think there is some brand and market value in that. Okay. And I think that's the end here, as if you want to send questions in for next week, which is for subscribers only, it's mailbag@wrestlenomics.com to send those questions in, mailbag@wrestlenomics.com. And again, if you want to listen to this program every week, you go to patreon.com/wrestlenomics. If you have not already, and sign up, subscribe to get not only this program every week, every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, but you also get the in-depth, unmatched analysis with near daily exclusive reports on TV ratings, attendance trends, YouTube, and more, for all six major WWE and AEW shows. Every day that we get data for them, and every day that those shows happen the next day, or whenever the Nielsen TV ratings come out, we've got a full report with the market-to-market comparisons for attendance, with all the comparisons for TV ratings, with all the YouTube comparisons, with how each program did in terms of its highlights, plus for 2 years straight here. Over 2 years, going on 3 years, we've got quarter hours for every show, all six of those major shows as well. So patreon.com/WrestleNomics is where to sign up if you haven't already. And thanks to everybody who does sign up and supports WrestleNomics, and allows all this to happen, allows all these maps to be behind me and so forth and things of that nature. We'll be back on Wednesday with Pollock and Thurston on Thursday instead of Wednesday, because there's a TKO earnings report happening on Wednesday. I believe at 5 o'clock, and we will cover that on Thursday at that time. So thanks everybody for listening, supporting. Talk to you next time. Bye.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.